Hello, I am Marianna Salem, aka Mary. I am a Lebanese Aboriginal bisexual woman.
Hello, I'm Duryadin Haq, also known as Daya. I'm an Indonesian Pakistani non-binary lesbian.
We are two writers who love movies, television, and books, especially when they're gay.
And welcome to Gay V Club, where we'll be analysing LGBT texts
that we like, that we don't like, and how we relate to these texts as gay people of colour.
Hello.
Hello! We hope everyone is being safe and everyone is doing their best in this time, whatever that means to you. But we are going to talk about some movies today. Actually, we're only going to talk about one movie. But before we get started, of course, if you like Gay V Club, which hopefully you do because you're here, please like, subscribe, or rate, leave a nice review. Tell your friends. This is a big one. Like, please recommend us to friends, to family. Send your favorite ep to your crush and be like, oh, what is this? What? This is my favorite podcast with my two faves, and they're talking about my favorite piece of LGBT media. What if we listen to it together? Either way.
And we're both girls.
Mm-hmm, and we're both girls.
So recommendations would be good.
Recommendations.
You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram for updates at @gayv_club. And if you'd like to support this podcast, we also have a Patreon, which is at patreon.com/gayvclub, where you can listen to more bonus episodes from us.
Yes, we've already got some bonus episodes up there. Dee interviews me about Irene Adler. I interview her about GIF making, about Keira Knightley movies ranked by how gay they make her feel. What's the other one you interviewed me about? Oh, my top five bisexual characters.
Yeah.
$5 and you get bonus episodes, and you also get early access to our episodes. Or if you don't require anything from us, we also just have a tip jar. So go check out our Patreon.
Thank you.
Please. So what are we going to talk about today, Dee?
Today we are going to talk about Celine Sciamma's 2019 masterpiece, which is Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Woo, woo, woo. Oh, man, what a film.
It is a French film set in 18th century Brittany, where Marianne, a painter, played by Noémie Merlant, is commissioned to do the wedding portrait of Héloïse, played by Adèle Haenel, a young woman who has just left a convent.
Has she just left the convent?
Yeah, bro.
Oh, I missed that detail. Okay, cool.
Her sister dies, and so she has to leave the convent so that she can be the married-off daughter.
Oh, I never connect those dots. Anyway, continue.
Thank you. So yeah, Héloïse is a reluctant bride-to-be, and Marianne must paint her without her knowing. She observes her by day to paint her secretly.
Ooh, and then they fall in love.
Yeah, And it's beautiful. I remember when this movie was first announced, and Sciamma fans and Adèle Haenel fans, like, we were really like, oh my god, who's going to be the painter? Who's going to be the lady? What's going to... What's gonna happen? Because like, we knew the cast, but we didn't know who was playing who.
Oh, cool.
For the longest time, we were hoping actually that Adèle would be the painter, but alas.
Look, when this film was announced, I didn't pay attention because it's French. Quite honestly, I have prejudice against the French because they colonized so many places, including Lebanon. So when this movie was announced, I didn't pay attention and I wasn't aware of it. And I will say that with my whole chest. Even when I looked at the Sydney Film Festival program, I wasn't sure if I was going to see it because it's French. I know.
I have the same criticisms towards France, but I really love their cinema. It's so hard for me to get you to watch some of my favorite films because you won't, because they're French. Sometimes they're not even French. They're just speaking French and like, you're just...
No, but...
It's hard, bro.
Do you know how...
I'm trying.
Do you know...
I need you to watch Mummy by Xavier Dolan and you won't.
It's so funny.
They're Canadian, bro.
I like to call myself a vicarious Xavier Dolan fan because I don't watch any of his films because they're in French, but like, I love him because he's like Arab and gay, so I gotta stan. But like, it's just hard, yeah. Because you'll be like, oh, watch this movie, and I'm like, it's in French, like, I'd rather die. And you're just like,
Okay, what's John F. Donovan?
The reason I'm painting this portrait, like what I did there, okay, is that I need you, listeners, to understand just how much was already working against this film for me to like it, okay? I was ready to, at best, feel indifferent to this film, but because Dee had convinced me, she was like, this is going to be so good, the director's a lesbian, like, come on, you gotta come see it. And she was...
Had you already seen Girlhood by then?
Yeah, I had.
Céline Sciamma made Girlhood as well.
I know, but I didn't realize that. I don't pay attention to French names. So when I went into this movie, I was just ready to not like it. And I'm not ashamed to admit it. I'll say that with my whole chest. I was not ready to like this film, let alone love it. But here I am today because this movie became one of my absolute favorite movies. It's in my top four movies on Letterboxd. I just love this movie. My face hurt from grinning so much watching this movie. I think it is beautiful and gentle. And I remember us like coming out of the cinema, like we were just like all smiles. We were just sighing contentedly.
I remember the credits rolling and, you know, it's the song that's being sung by those women around the fire just playing in the credits, and I just like sinking in my chair so happy.
Oh, it was so good.
Like, we sat there for a while.
We did. We sat there just letting it all sink in.
That was such a good day for me because I'd seen Parasite in the morning. Then I went to a Q&A with Bong Joon-ho, which was really cool.
And then
I went to go see Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
You saw the that two was like, best films.
That was literally the best day of my year.
Yeah, you saw the year. Two best films of 2019 in one day.
On the same day. Mm. It killed me. I love movies. God, I love movies. That was my mood the whole day.
Honestly, like, I love when Keanu says that. It's like, mood.
I know.
But yeah, I just think we can both agree that we love this movie. And that's the end of the episode, everybody. Goodbye.
Yeah. As I mentioned before, I was excited about this movie. I'm a fan of Céline Sciamma. She made Girlhood. She made Tomboy. She made Water Lilies. Just all iconic stories about the people her movies focus on, the characters. They're not characters that you see often in any other kind of cinema that you see portrayed ever. She does the same kind of thing with this movie as well.
I actually love Girlhood. I think Girlhood's like a really beautiful movie.
Mm. Portrait of a Lady on Fire, it's just a beautiful, beautiful film, and it's the second best lesbian film ever made.
Mm. We're going to briefly talk about the best lesbian film ever made a bit later on.
Oh, you agree?
The way you said that, I was like...
Oh, so you agree.
Oh, so you agree. You think you're really pretty.
Yeah.
Oh, so you agree? You think The Handmaiden is the best lesbian film of all time? Well, I guess for the purpose of this conversation, like, if we're talking on this scale, then yes. I honestly don't feel like I've watched enough of lesbian cinema to even make that call for myself. But, you know, certainly they are two of my favourites.
They are up there.
They are up there.
They are definitely better than any English language lesbian film that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I can't dispute this.
But anyway... Portrait of a Lady on Fire is really great because, you know, you have a lesbian director, you have a lesbian actress as the titular Lady on Fire.
Mm.
They're actually exes who are just really great friends who
the director
to work
and
together.
The director and yeah. Adele. Yeah,
yeah. Céline Sciamma and Adele Hynel are, they used to be partners and now they're partners.
In a creative project.
Yeah, there's a really beautiful thing that Sciamma said in this Autostraddle interview about the movie where the subject of working with exes got brought up. And Sciamma said, she said, well, working together wasn't about having a new conversation, but just sharing our conversation with other people.
It's a beautiful and important conversation. This movie says a lot. And
there's a lot about art.
A lot. Of,
and the gaze.
A lot about art and the gays.
Did you want to talk about that, Mariana?
I do actually want to talk about that. Thank you for this perfectly normal segue. Okay, I've watched a lot of video essays about this movie, and I would like just sort of ask people to go and seek out like the many video essays that have been made about this movie because all of them are good and all of them are making some very good points. But one of the common points that they all bring up that I absolutely love about this movie is this movie... is very meta in the sense that it's about an artist creating an artwork of their lover, who is their lover in secret. And this is also like a film directed by a lesbian making a film about lesbians that during the time they were alive probably were kept secret or oppressed or just forgotten history. Like, we are experiencing this movie from Marianne's, the artist's point of view, and that works doubly because it's obviously, it's also like the film is a piece of art in itself. And on a surface level, this works in the sense that, like, there's obvious motifs throughout the movie with Marianne seeing, what would you call it, an apparition? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to call it an apparition. Like, she sees the apparition of Eloise in her wedding dress throughout the...
Or just a white dress.
Just a white dress. But I thought it was meant to be the wedding dress. I don't know.
Yeah, it is a white dress. You think, it's just like a creepy white dress. Like, she's dressed like a ghost. And then you find out at the end.
Yeah.
Pain.
You feel watching this movie like you're really experiencing it as Marianne experienced it. And, like, as she remembers it. The framing of this movie is so beautiful. I know people say this is like a compliment to a film, and it is a compliment, but also I think this film literally feels like every frame is like a still image. Like, it feels like it is a portrait, if it were.
Yeah.
Because Marianne is an artist, and obviously she remembers things like with these bold colors. The amount of block colors that's in this movie is beautiful. When I watched this movie, that I was watching a memory, and Celine Sciamma like really pulled that off, not just in the visuals of it, but also in like only using music in the film when Marianne actually heard music in the time that she was there. And so, yeah, everything we feel in the film is sort of meant to be how Marianne felt it at the time.
Yeah.
And it really...
It's really, like, impressionistic.
And you never... I didn't realize this until the second time I watch it, but you there's no scene where Marianne isn't present. It's just her. Like, it's just her story. I had a weird made-up memory in my head that there was a scene with, like, just Eloise. And when we watched it together not too long ago, I was like, oh, I made this scene up in my head. It's not actually real.
I don't know. Maybe it was. Maybe it was in the first cut that we saw.
Maybe.
There's definitely been a change since.
Yeah. But
I've got to say, like, I felt like I was going crazy, but I'm pretty sure, like, what we saw in the cut of the film that we saw in June.
Had more titty.
2019. Yeah, it had more titty, but also just... There could have been a scene with Eloise by herself. I have no idea. Like, it makes more sense that all the scenes have Marianne, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. The cut I saw in June 2019 is not the same as the cut that I saw in October.
Yeah, I don't think it was either.
And it was very confusing.
It was. I remember.
I
remember we were talking about, like, shots that we remembered. But then.
That we really liked.
Yeah, and when we couldn't find them.
I remember distinctly seeing, you know, the shot of Marianne looking in the mirror to draw herself as Eloise is lying there. I don't remember there being a sheet covering her, because I distinctly remember thinking, oh my god, I won't be able to post a still of this on Tumblr because of the explicit content ban.
Yep.
Yeah, I think about dumb things like this when I watch movies.
Not titties, female presenting nipples.
Yeah.
I know it feels like I went all English teacher for a second and I was talking about motifs and visuals.
And now we're talking about titties.
But bringing back to the point I was making before we got distracted by titties, I love looking at the way films use perspective. I think a lot of films are actually quite lazy with perspective, and films are just sort of presented like, here are some events. And I really love when a filmmaker has like made the effort to be like, this film is from this character's perspective, and everything you're looking at is how they perceive the story. It's not just the story, it's like their perception of the story. And I really love this movie because it's such a specific perspective that you're seeing, and because she's an artist, it's just beautiful, the use of perspective in this film. I just love it. But the main reason I love this movie is because through this use of perspective, and specifically like through this use of a story that's about memory, it's creating lesbian history. It's creating history for a group of people that is traditionally quite hidden and repressed. and even destroyed. We know a lot of LGBT history has been destroyed quite deliberately or just lost. And I think that's one of the reasons why films like this are so powerful. Like, I think about other films that sort of deal with this topic in different ways. I think about The Watermelon Woman, where Cheryl Dunier, that's a documentary. And honestly, I was shook when you find out that it's like a fictional documentary, because I thought it was real. I was like, oh, but the whole thing with The Watermelon Woman is that Cheryl Dunier is creating this persona of a black lesbian actress who isn't real, but sort of represents all the black lesbians that we may not know about that existed in that time and in that space. Similarly, Ellie and Abby and Ellie's Dead Aunt is an Australian film that was, well, released last year, this year? I don't know.
This year.
This year, really?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, it hasn't really gotten a release yet because COVID.
Apologies, it hasn't gotten a release yet, so I can't tell you where to watch this. But it is about a teenage Australian girl who, after she comes out to her mum, starts getting helpfully haunted by her lesbian aunt, who she never knew about, who is dead. And the film, on the surface, and for like maybe a good two-thirds of it, is just this very funny sort of romp about Ellie trying to ask the girl she has a crush on out, and Ellie's dead aunt trying to help her do this to varying degrees of success. But it's also the subplot about what actually happened to the aunt, and why Ellie never knew about her, and why she died so young. I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but the film centers around Australia's very specific LGBT history in the 80s and refers to...
It refers to a specific activist campaign in Sydney.
Yeah, in Sydney. Yeah. That was a march on Oxford Street, which is the sort of center of a lot of the gay community in Sydney.
Yeah.
And again, it's this movie where it's not based on a true story in the sense that Ellie's dead aunt was a real person, and it's more like creating this analogous figure in order to show that history, in order to personalize that history.
Yeah.
And that's what The Watermelon Woman does, and that's what Portrait of a Lady on Fire does. It creates this history that we know must exist, because I don't know if you know this, Dee, but like LGBT people didn't just pop into existence in the 80s.
What?
Yeah, I know. They have existed. We...
You mean Tears for Fears didn't release Everybody Wants to Rule the World and suddenly gay people just popped up?
No, I'm sorry. I am here to debunk the myth. And I love films that have the audacity to create this history. I recently found this quote from E.M. Foster. It says, "When I am with him, smoking or talking quietly ahead, or whatever it may be, I see beyond my own happiness and intimacy occasional glimpses of the happiness of thousands of others whose names I shall never hear and know, and I know that there is a great unrecorded history." And I feel like that's what these movies are. They are creating that unrecorded history through imagination. And that's why I really like what you said about the conversation, how Celine and Adele, I like how you said that they saw it as bringing a conversation.
Sharing their conversation.
Yeah, because I feel like that's what these films are. And I feel like this is the reason why this movie feels so personal to lesbians and bi women in a universal way, despite it being about two very specifically white and young French ladies on a freaking island. I don't even know where they are. I don't know where Brittany is. What is that? But despite it being so specifically specific, it's showing lesbians and women who love women that we existed and lived in the past, not just to suffer, but to love and enjoy and to be happy. And even if that happiness was only short-lived, we had it and we weren't just always these figures of suffering. Maybe people would see this as idealistic, but who is anyone to say that the past wasn't like this for some people? Who's to say, like, I'm sorry, were you there? Were you there? Like, did you interview these women?
Skiama, she did actually talk about how she specifically wanted to set it during this period of art history because there were actually, like, a lot of women painters at the time.
Oh.
who had really successful careers like Marianne did.
Oh.
She has this quote. She's like, we're always being told about women's progress and women's opportunity, that we're getting there, but it's not true. It's cycles. And we can see it today, and we experience the backlash also. And she is talking about how there was actually like a really strong female critic scene, art scene at the time that we just didn't know about. So it's also like bringing that hidden history to the forefront. Another thing that you wanted to say, like about people considering this film as being idealistic, I don't know. I don't think that's been the criticism for it, because it's been very, I think the criticism is that it's too realistic, because I know that Sugiyama also defended the ending and the fact that it's such a short time that they spend together, because it would have been a disservice to those women that probably did exist, that definitely did exist back then, who had lives like that. Like, it would have been a disservice to have this frozen image of them just happy and together at the end, because that's not what life was.
I guess because, as we've established, I have a very different perception of what a happy ending looks like. So I actually find the ending to be quite beautiful and to be happy in its own way.
It is happy.
It is happy for me. I find it to be an extremely, like, happy ending. Like, not extremely, but, like, I do not feel saddened by the ending at all.
Yeah.
But the thing I want to talk about, like, with that...
the 28th page.
So the page, like, of course we all know, like, if you've seen this movie, you know the scene. Marianne is in a gallery where her painting is being shown, and she sees a portrait of Eloise, of not the one that she painted, done of her in the years since they were together. And it is her with her child. And in the portrait, she is holding the book that they read together when they were together. And on the corner, she's got the cover of the book turned over so that you can see what page she was reading. The painter was very studious in painting the page number. And it's on page 28, which was the page that Marianne did a portrait of herself on for Eloise to keep. So it's this beautiful moment of her realizing that Eloise, like, has not forgotten her and still thinks of her, and they are still sort of together on that island in their memory together.
That they were both the most influential people that they'd met in each other's lives.
Yeah, and I think obviously this moment is beautiful for what it says about these characters and how much they love each other. But for me, like, it is beautiful in that historical sense. It just made me very emotional thinking about, like, how many hidden signs like this are there that we don't know about? How many paintings are there? How many pieces of art are there that have these hidden gestures of love, like these hidden love languages in them, that we'll just never know about because the people are long gone, the people who made that art are long gone, and the people who the art is about is long gone. Man, it was just, like, overwhelming for me, actually, like, thinking about, like, all that love that's hidden in all these pieces of art that we just don't know about. It's a lot. Damn. It's a lot to think about. But it's also, like, quite beautiful. And I love that Celine Sciamma was very deliberately doing that, saying that there is a hidden history and there's no way we can know it, but maybe the best we can do is pay tribute to it in these types of films where we imagine them and we imagine them honestly. I love this movie because I love history and I love mythology and I love a bit of metafiction. I love fiction that's aware of what it is and uses that to tell an interesting story.
There's also, I guess, another aspect of hidden history that they touch on in this movie that I know you wrote a dot point on.
Oh. The other hidden history that is present in this movie is that of the solidarity between women, and most specifically when it comes to abortion. I really did not think when this movie started that there would be an abortion scene in this movie.
No, that was a curveball.
That was a curveball. But actually it feels, like, very organic within the movie itself. So there is a third character in the film that is quite important, and that is Sophie. Sophie is Eloise's maid, and she's obviously in the house with them while they are falling in love and Marianne is painting Eloise. I actually love Sophie. I think she's great. Eloise's mum leaves to go and do something. I think go to Milan. She said she's going to come back in 3 days or something. So they have 3 days where the three women, Sophie, Eloise and Mariana, are alone together on the island. And that's where a lot of the romance takes place. But it's also where a lot of this really beautiful friendship and solidarity between the three women as friends happens. And most significantly, the two scenes, the titular scene, where the lady is indeed on fire.
Oh.
And it is when Eloise, Sophie, and Marianne go to, I don't even know what it is, like just a bonfire, just a bunch of ladies hanging out. All the ladies from the surrounding area, I guess, they gather around this big bonfire and the ladies all start singing. It's a banger. And they're singing it like a cappella. There's no instruments, obviously. Again, it's like this, the naturally occurring music. And it's the scene where Eloise stands in the fire. She's standing there and she's so busy looking at Marianne and how beautiful Marianne is that she doesn't care that her skirt has fallen on fire. And I was actually quite worried. I was like, oh no, is it called Portrait of a Lady on Fire because she burned to death? This would be quite a plot twist.
Dude.
Well, I don't know. But anyway, she just sort of, like, they put the fire out and it's fine, but I have described this scene very poorly, but it's like a very beautiful scene. And then the scene that follows after they have discovered that Sophie is pregnant, and I just want to say Sophie is the funniest character in this movie. She is hilarious. Yeah. She is so funny.
No, the bit where Marianne is just like, oh, I've never seen Eloise smile. And then Sophie's just like, have you tried being funny?
Legend. But anyway, the scene that follows, Sophie has revealed that she's pregnant in a very Sophie-like way. She's just sort of like, oh yeah, haven't got my period in a couple of months. I was just waiting for the mistress of the house to be away and I was going to deal with it. And Eloise and Marianne are like, oh, we'll help you. So instead of like, I don't know, even bothering with the debate of, oh, like, Sophie, you should keep this child. Like, no, they don't bother with that. They're like, we got you. Like, we're going to help you. And it's just a sequence that follows of them trying out all these home abortion, DIY abortion things that they've, I don't know, probably heard.
And, like, these are things that, like, women did.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
I recognized it because
you have a fascination with this kind of thing.
I don't really, no. It just happens to be in a lot of things I watch.
Oh, okay.
In Penny Dreadful season 2, when Vanessa like goes and spends time with the witch lady on the moors, she like performs abortions for like the girls like that come to her, and there's a scene where she's walking with Vanessa like through the woods and she lists out all the things that they try to do. You know, they'll try running, they'll try hanging upside down, they'll try doing all this. And so that's why I remember that scene and I could recognize that they were doing that. Yeah, it's not that I have a weird fascination with abortion in movie. That would be weird.
I don't think it's a weird fascination. It's just a fascination because this is not something that people really talk about.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Anyway.
I guess it is, though, because, yeah, like you said, like people don't really talk about it. And I love that it was presented like that in the movie. I love that it was presented in the fact that Marianne and Eloise like weren't judging her at all. They were just like, okay, like we'll help you.
Yeah, because for Sophie, that would have been like a really horrible thing to happen to her.
Oh,
given,
God.
Given like her status.
Yeah.
As well.
She would have lost her job and, oh.
Also, like something that I really love about this movie is the power dynamics.
Yeah.
And Skiama, like she said this thing. She's just like, I'm going to make you guys watch a movie where there's no men, and so you're gonna be watching a story with a power dynamic that you're not used to seeing. And yeah, I really love it. Like as you said the other night when we were watching it, you're like, I love this representation of like what girls do when mom isn't home.
Yes, literally. I feel like it is the most accurate representation I've ever seen, like of just what gals get up to when their mums aren't around. Like, it's not that,
yeah.
It's not that drastic. Maybe it doesn't feel that drastic what we do. It's just like, oh, okay, mum's not home.
Mm.
We're going to help our friend, like, abort her baby.
Yeah. You have, like, a film about these three women in a house, and they're from, like, very different walks of life, and they're just together, and they're on equal ground. Not just in the romance, but, yeah, you know that shot where it's Eloise cooking and Marianne is, I think she's drawing or something.
Yeah.
And Sophie is just like doing cross stitch and sewing.
Yeah.
And it's like a total role reversal.
It is.
Yeah, that's cinema.
It's so beautiful.
Poetic cinema.
The abortion scene itself, though.
Oh, yeah.
It is like breathtaking. Dude. That's a weird thing to say about an abortion scene, but honestly, it is just incredible. That baby, where is its Oscar? Did you tell me, Dee, that like the baby just did that in the scene?
Yeah. There was an interview with Skiama where they were like, how did you get the baby to do that? How did you get the baby to hold on to her to like wipe her tears? And then she's just like, no, the baby just did that. So we had to use that take.
All you see is Sophie lay down. The shot is like from above her and it only shows like her from the chest up. And in the shot with her is also, like, this woman who's performing the abortion, like, it's, like, her baby, is also on the bed with Sophie. And Sophie's crying, obviously, because she's in a lot of pain. And the baby, oh, my God, this baby, improvisation genius, wipes her tears. It is just stunning. I also like it because it's showing that she's not getting an abortion because she hates children or anything like that. She's getting an abortion because of her circumstance. And I think that's really powerful as well. So much power in this movie. But do you want to talk about the power dynamics now?
It's not really like a whole thing that I wanted to talk about.
I think it's good to talk about.
That this is a movie about two women who are like, like, it's actually very rare in lesbian cinema, in a romance, for the women to be the same age. And when casting this movie, they specifically chose actors who were the same age, the same height even. I just hate age gaps, and I'm glad this movie didn't do that. Yeah.
I'm a huge age gap anti, as you know.
When Skiama said, you know, you're going to watch an age, a power dynamic you're not used to, I think the age is a part of it, because we actually aren't used to a lesbian story where the women are the same age. It's like so rampant. Age gaps and like predatory romances in gay cinema is so prevalent. It's horrible. Like, you see it in Carol and Call Me By Your Name and a bunch of other movies, and it's, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. Like, I know that it's incredibly normalized and it's normal and normalized in the community, but it really shouldn't be. And
no,
yeah, I just appreciate media that doesn't do that.
I also just hate how it's always so uncritically presented as well. No one's saying that this doesn't happen. Like, no one wants to like be that dishonest and say like this never happens, but like the fact that you have it in this movie and you're presenting it as this great love and this great thing that is so virtuous and so beautiful and so wonderful without critically engaging with the age difference that often exists between gay and lesbian couples on screen. Please, I'm begging you, grow a brain cell. Like, I'm honestly I'm begging you, please.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to say, really. I didn't want to make it a big thing, okay. But I guess we made it bigger than I intended. But back to power dynamics, you're not used to, you know, the absence of men is also what creates this dynamic that we see on screen, because there are no men in this movie, really.
There's not even men as an opposing force. You know what I mean?
No, it's really just circumstance. That's what the opposing force is. And you know that, like, the circumstance, you know, it is the patriarchy, it is men anyway, but, like, you don't have to see any men. When a man finally does show up in this movie, it's like, oh, no. Like, it's genuinely scary because you know it's over. This movie is, quote-unquote, like a manifesto of the female gaze, as people have been calling it. Not just because there's no men. Like, it's very unique the way that this movie is shot. Like, it's actually, like, you actually see the way women look at other women.
Mm.
The way lesbians look at each other. Yeah, it's wonderful.
It is.
It's genius.
Oh, I hate the overuse of this word, but I can't think of a better one for the moment. But just the tenderness, maybe compassion is a better word, like that's also in the way that it's shot. You know,
the empathy.
The empathy that exists in the way that it's shot, the empathy that they have for Sophie when, you know, when they're helping her.
Mm. This movie is just so kind.
It is. It's so gentle.
And so open.
Yeah. It's one of those films that I don't think is one of the films that a lot of gays love that is overrated. It is not overrated at all, which is, you know, rare for me. But I made an observation when we were preparing for this episode, because Dee reminded me that when the credits rolled on this movie, I turned to her and I was like, I think what this movie is for me is what The Handmaiden is for you, in the sense that, you know, it's one of my favorite movies. And I think you did point out in your The Handmaiden episode that we did that Portrait of a Lady on Fire is very similar to The Handmaiden. And the way I phrased it last night was Portrait of a Lady on Fire is like an acoustic cover of The Handmaiden. And if you would like to speak to that, I would love to listen.
Yeah, okay. I don't mean this as like an insult to Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Like, I love both films. Like, I think the reason that I love Portrait of a Lady on Fire is because I saw so much of The Handmaiden in it, because it's got like very similar plot beats and slightly similar structure, like especially for the first two acts. I do think Portrait of a Lady on Fire is its own movie, obviously. I guess the thing that has been plaguing film gaze since 2016 is us always trying to find Moonlight or The Handmaiden in every other movie that we watch, like something that can like match that, you know? So I guess I made these connections because Portrait of a Lady on Fire, like The Handmaiden, you know, it's a period drama about this high-ranking lady who lives in a very isolated place, who ends up getting a companion who is another woman who is there for ulterior motives, but ends up falling in love with each other. So that's a link that I found. Also, there are just a lot of very similar shots.
Oh my God, I, who have not seen The Handmaiden anywhere near the amount of times that you have, but even I could see the similarity in the shots.
I was really like excited like when I first watched Portrait of a Lady on Fire, because I was like, oh my God, The Handmaiden's impact. But yeah, Celine Sciamma has said nothing on that. Like, obviously I know that Portrait of a Lady on Fire, it is inspired by a lot of other things, especially Persona by Ingmar Bergman and other films like that. But
so you're trying really hard not to talk about that Titanic interview.
She even noted like Titanic as an influence, and I'm like, I don't really expect her to acknowledge it. It's fine. I don't need her to. But what you said about Portrait of a Lady on Fire resonating like so widely with all kinds of people, despite being very white and French. Something that I realized recently about Portrait of a Lady on Fire is, oh my God, this is like a gay movie that I like that a lot of other gay people like, as in a lot of white gay people like. I think there are some white people who are fans of this movie who make people who aren't white, people who aren't cis, feel unwelcome.
Yes.
Even like as an audience member of this movie, whether you're in a cinema, whether you're online, whether you're at a festival. And I don't like that. I don't normally have that kind of film experience, because so much of the movies that I am obsessed with are like focused on people of color or made by people of color. But yeah, being put into like this white space and being made to feel that this movie can't possibly be for me, it's a bit sad. And I know that that's not what Sciamma is saying. Like, this movie is for everyone. I just think that certain audience members need to stop just being awful.
Yeah.
I just think white people should stop.
And end of the episode.
We always talk about how specificity is really good, because specificity and being more personal is more powerful. And once you actually get into a specific mindset, you can make something for everyone. And I think that's what this movie is. But also, like, this movie is not the only movie that's doing that.
No.
That's what I want to say. And if you can empathize with some 18th century lesbians in an isolated island in Brittany, wherever the hell that is.
Literally, where is Brittany?
You can empathize.
Is this the Brittany people want to free?
With movies about people of color. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
I do want to add, though, I was talking about hidden history and how this is showing a hidden history. Mm. I meant sort of like in the revealing of that hidden history is where it's universal, not necessarily in what it's showing you. You know, I feel like...
I think what it's showing you can be universal as
well.
Yeah,
true. But I also think...
like, the experiences.
I also think, like, when people...
the concerns of these
when
women.
When people have asked me, like, oh, I really like Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Like, what else can I watch that like that's like it? Like, I don't know. Like, I have, like, suggested The Handmaiden to people. I'm like, well, if you haven't seen it, you should watch The Handmaiden, because it did a very similar thing, like, 4 years ago. And no one really... well, not no one. That's not true. Like, a lot of people paid attention, and it was, like... a very, like, well-awarded film.
But it has all this baggage to it.
It does have all this...
that this film avoided.
Yeah, and that's why I said, like, Portrait of a Lady on Fire is, like, an acoustic cover of The Handmaiden, because it's The Handmaiden without all the baggage, which, you know, is fine. And I've talked about how, like, I, too, love both films. I do think as well... this movie is very palatable, but I also think that's a very deliberate decision in it as well. And different filmmakers can present history in a different way. And I do think it's sort of, I don't want to say it's bold, but like, it is kind of bold to be like,
it is bold
to be like, these ladies had a nice time. Okay. They had a nice time.
They had a wonderful time. They had the best time of their life, and that time ended. That's the most important thing, that that time ended.
Mm-hmm.
That's the boldest thing about this movie, is that time actually ended,
but,
and it wasn't treated as a horrible, tragic thing.
And here's where I'm going to link to your point. To be able to say that these ladies had a nice time, there's a lot of privilege in the boldness of that statement. Like, to be able to look back in history and say, hey, these white women who are in love with each other, they had a nice time. That is not a privilege that would have been true of, like, lesbians of color at the time. Or even lesbians who were gender non-conforming, as we know from flippin' Gentleman Jack in, like, the diaries of, what's her name?
From Ann Lister.
Yeah.
The Ladies of Llangollen and things,
you know,
like that.
So I think to be able to look back in the past and be able to imagine yourself having a nice time in the past is very much a privilege that you have. I don't think there's anything wrong. Like you said, I don't think there's anything wrong with this movie being nice. But I do think the audience who is making, you know, people of color feel like a certain way, you know, you need to remember that. To be able to remember your history fondly, even your hidden history fondly, that's a privilege that you have that a lot of people simply do not have. And again, I don't want to be a downer because, as I've said for this whole episode, like, I love this movie, but I think, you know, it's just worth acknowledging. You know, if you like this movie...
look at other really specific stories like this movie. Because
specificity
exist.
Is amazing. Canopy is where it's at.
Hell yeah.
Canopy is all the specificity you want. Sometimes it's too specific. I look at a blurb for a film on Canopy, I'm like, what the hell is this? Also, I think the criteria for Canopy is quite funny. Anything can be on there as long as it was nominated for an award. Like, where is the Razzie section?
Really?
Yeah, that's the criteria of Canopy. It's award-winning
cinema. Interesting.
Anyway, do we have any final thoughts? Do you have any final thoughts?
I guess there still are people that don't really want to watch this movie because they consider it a sad ending. But also, like, I think this film, it challenges what you think a happy ending is. It challenges, I guess, heteronormativity, in like the heteronormative gaze in that way. And I think it takes a really bold step in saying that these women had a wonderful time. They had the best time. They had the most influential time of their life. And that time ended. Because
as Celine Sciamma said, and completely, like, blew my mind when she said it, she said, the best love stories are about emancipation. And when she said this, my mind connected all the dots, and I realized what a lot of my favorite romances have in common. Emancipation is at the heart of them. Emancipation, I actually had to look up what this word meant. Like, I know what it means instinctively, but I don't know what the actual dictionary definition of it is. And it's like freedom.
It's about liberation.
Yeah, it's about gaining autonomy and freedom in a social or romantic or political sense. Like, it can mean a lot of things, actually. But it's essentially about, like, having autonomy and freedom and growing. And I think all my favorite love stories are about emancipation in some way. And I love the way that this film is about, like, these women wouldn't be who they are without each other, even though the each other part was only brief. It emancipated them to be successful and to be fully formed people. And I think that's really beautiful.
People who have loved.
People who have loved. And I think, like, this is perfectly encapsulated when, you know, she says to her on that last night, she says, you know, when you asked me if I'd ever been in love, and I said yes, I was talking about you.
Yeah.
Amazing. Incredible. Mm. The best love stories are about emancipation, and this is one of the best love stories.
Yeah, it really is. Oh, we didn't even talk about... We didn't even talk about Eurydice and Orpheus.
Oh, no.
Never mind. We don't have time. We don't have time for that. We'll talk about it later.
Killing Eve stands recently ruined it for me, so I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm so glad that I don't know what you're talking about.
Good. I also think that now that Portrait of a Lady on Fire used it, like, there are other movies that are using it and, like,
dude, gays have been making references to this particular legend since forever. Portrait of a Lady on Fire is not the first one to use it. I think it's...
Why?
I've never even heard it. Really? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I do really love that they have that scene where they're actually, like, reading it and discussing it very intensely. That's just the mood, I think. That's just what Gay V Club is, technically.
Yeah. That's what the gals do when mum is away. We sit down and we're like... How do you feel about the interpretation of this ancient myth?
Yeah. But also the very final scene, which is the last time that Marianne saw Eloise. It's lovely. There's a scene in the beginning of the movie where Marianne is talking about the music that she's heard and, like, the concerts that she's been to. Eloise asks her to show her on a out-of-tune piano. Or is it a harpsichord? I don't know. It's like the old-style piano, you know? And she starts to play Vivaldi for her, and she's playing it really bad, and it's literally like that camp rock scene where she's playing the keyboard. And Demi Lovato is like, she's really good. Like, that's literally like Marianne playing the piano harpsichord, and Eloise is just completely taken with it because she's so in love with her. She's like, she's really good.
That's a cinematic parallel.
But yeah, I love this final scene so much where... Marianne, she goes to see a concert and she sees...
Sorry, yep.
What?
I just had a realization. Keep going.
Okay, when she goes to the concert and she sees that Eloise is there, and I think about how that final shot that's just, you know, a zoom on Eloise's face as she hears the Vivaldi song being played. Think about it. It's like maybe Marianne never told Eloise, like, who the composer was or what the song is. So maybe you think if you have this image of Eloise going to all these concerts trying to find the song because she can't Shazam it, unfortunately. Because Shazam doesn't exist. She's going around to all these concerts to listening to all this music because she can't Shazam it, because she's trying to find that memory of Marianne again.
Can't Shazam the GF's music.
And it's like this final scene, this zoom on Eloise's face, and, like, you know, she's crying and she's breathing and just feel, you can see the emotion washing over her. God, it's such a good performance by Adele.
Honestly.
And it's like maybe this is, like, finally, after all these, like, going to God knows how many concerts, she's been able to finally find the song. She's been able to finally find the memory because she was looking for Marianne that whole time.
Through and memory.
She was able to find her.
Honestly, I don't know. I can't speak for everyone, but it would be really awesome if we saw Portrait of a Lady on Fire again, but it was, like, purely from Eloise's perspective in the way that it would be, like, instead of the memory that she's haunted by, like, Marianne is haunted by the memory of the dress, of Eloise in the dress. Mm. But instead of that, the motif throughout it is that Vivaldi song. Yeah. Being
played badly. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like a horror movie. James Wan directs. No, but the realization I had before is the scene you were talking about in Camp Rock. okay, is the scene where Demi's character, I've forgotten all their names.
Yeah.
But Demi's character sees Alison Stoner's character and is like, oh, she's really good. And, you know, we jest. But also, like, you know, Alison Stoner came out as bi, like, a couple of years ago, and Demi has, like, been out as bi for ages. So technically,
oh,
you could read into the subtext of that scene, and it becomes a cinematic parallel.
I hate you so much.
You know, and I may be projecting as someone who had a had latent crushes on both of those women at various times. Cheaper by the dozen, gang, where you at? But that is my final thought. Portrait of a Lady on Fire actually parallels with Camp Rock, if you try.
Anyways.
She's overcome with love for me, guys.
Anyways, thank you for listening. I think that's a good place to end
the episode. For listening.
I'm so sorry.
Just a PSA, though, like, on a, like, not a serious note, but for Australians, Portrait of a Lady on Fire will be out on Stan in August.
Yeah.
So you can actually stream it over and over again.
Yeah.
Get on that. For everyone else, I have no idea. Google. Use the Googles.
Yeah. You can also get the Criterion.
Yeah, the Criterion cover for it looks amazing.
Yeah. Can I just say, I don't like... So many people are, like, complaining about the cover, but I think my main gripe with it is the pale green border of it. I think it washes out the portrait. That's all I had to say. Yeah. I don't want it. At least it's better than the Parasite cover. Anyway.
Anything is better than the Parasite cover.
I'm so mad. But yes, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Again, please like, subscribe, rate. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @GayV_Club. Please support us on Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just at Gay V Club as well. Usually we do our volumes in like 6 episodes, so usually this would be the last episode of the volume. But
I've decided time is stupid.
Yeah. Also, The Last of Us 2 came out and Mary has some thoughts and...
I do. I'm not even finished and I already have thoughts.
I have some thoughts and remember our friend Will? Came on to our Star Wars episode. He also has some thoughts, so we're going to talk about it in the next episode.
He does. And he's actually very excited.
And we're very excited for this. So...
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to... Yep, sneaky, but not sneaky. It's not sneaky. It's on a public forum, but, you know... I had the way, you know how, like, white women be like, oh, it's a chinky little, like, chocolate. You know?
I say that, but like it's a cheeky cigarette.
Yeah.
It's a cheeky cider. Anyways.
It's a cheeky gallon of alcohol. But yeah,
it's a cheeky extra episode that we hadn't planned, but actually we did have it planned. It's just they haven't finished playing it.
I'm sorry.
So this is technically a filler episode, but whatever.
No, it's not.
We've been saying we're going to talk about this movie for ages. Yeah, it's nice that we actually ended up talking about one of the things that we said we would talk about this volume.
I know, but then so many things happened. That we had to talk about.
But yeah, please tune in next episode for our review of The Last of Us Part 2. But yes, thank you. Be safe. Love you all.
PSA. Wear a mask.
Please wear a mask when you're out in public. Or even better, just don't go out in public if you can.
Yeah. Wear a mask. Much appreciated. And be wary of each other. Social distance. And respect each other.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.